It all started later in an established life by buying a camera on a whim and evolved into a talent for wildlife photography. Those shots that we admire and scroll through, we fail to realize the days, the hours, and patience taking these majestic pictures. Your perspective on life changes when seeing these animals in their natural habitat. So imagine if you're the photographer capturing these precious creatures in the wild. My guest is now a world-renowned, acclaimed, and published wildlife photographer. He did it all with heart and passion. Let's find out more by asking 10 questions to my extraordinary guest, Michel Zilzerou. Hi, Michel.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. We're all so excited. So we just, how about before I ask questions, you tell us a little bit about yourself, because you're not initially a wildlife photographer.
I'm not at all. Actually, I'm a business person. I have an MBA in finance. I run a family business. And then, as you said, at the age of 40, I was going to London to a polo tournament organized by a friend of mine.
Right.
The plane was late.
The plane was late.
Absolutely. Thank God it was.
Wow.
I buy a camera
at
the airport, and I spend 4 hours or 5 hours from Beirut to London reading the manual.
Oh, okay. You went into the technical details right away.
And I fell in love with photography. And from this day onward, I've been, you know, just whenever I have the chance, going on trips for photography.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm initially a business person. And now my life is, let's say, equally shared between my business that finances my photography and my photography.
Right. Yeah, because you've become a successful photographer, so you're following up on your...
And I love it. It's my passion.
Did you take pictures on the plane?
No, I took pictures at the polo tournament. At the time, I thought they were amazing. Now that I look at them, they were not. But that's fine.
All right. Okay. So to start, like, because you're taking pictures of wildlife, did you always have a relationship with animals when you were young, when you were growing up? Because why did you choose wildlife? I mean, even like humans are kind of like wildlife in a way.
Why did I choose wildlife? Yes, I've always loved wildlife and I've always loved nature, but I've always had a problem, which is I'm very impatient.
Oh.
So there was no way I could stay in nature for more than an hour or two, let alone 3 weeks,
right,
if I did not have a goal. So now photography provides me with a goal that allows me to spend 2 or 3 weeks in nature. I'm very competitive.
Okay.
So my goal is to get the photo that no one has gotten before me, that will change the perspective of people on a certain animal, that will save a certain species. So I have a goal.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I have a goal, I can spend hours and days in nature. Yes, but I've always loved nature, yes.
So you contrasted this impatience with patience in the
My camera is like a pacifier. Basically, you give me a camera, I can spend hours and days in nature.
Wow.
So the camera allowed me to actually go and spend time in nature.
Yeah, the ultimate goal for
Absolutely.
That. Okay. So, and where did you go the first time? What was it like? What was the first shot?
My first trip was South Africa.
Okay.
We did, this was actually a couple of years after I had started photography. So I was like, I was not as bad as I was 2 years earlier. So I started to improve a bit. So yes, I went to South Africa on a normal safari, and then we spent about 4 or 5 days with sharks, doing shark photography.
From the safari to the sharks?
It was, the safari was next to Johannesburg in Kruger Park, and then the sharks were closer to Cape Town.
Are they both controlled environments?
No, they're neither. I mean, the safaris are, they're open plains.
Yeah. But still a little bit.
But there's no control. I mean, they're in the wild.
Okay.
But it's South Africa, so everything is very organized.
Yeah.
And the sharks, no, the sharks were just in the ocean. So so we did this. And then after this, I went to the Masai Mara, then India. So, you know, I've been doing about 4 trips a year for about 20 years now.
Oh, 4 trips a year.
Maybe, you know, some years 2, some years 5.
Yeah.
This year probably 5.
Taking advantage of it all.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You might as well. What qualities do you need to become a wildlife photographer? And what makes a good wildlife photographer great?
I can't really answer the second one, but the first one, the qualities. First of all, in photography in general, you need, in my opinion, and this is why I started reading the manual to get very technical, it's extremely important to have the eye, the artistic part, and the technique.
Okay.
Because you have an idea in mind as a photographer, as an artist, that you want to achieve, but without knowing the technique, you cannot achieve it.
Okay.
I mean, you can't just get the photo blurred by chance and say it's art, or just come up with a black and white photography and say this is art, or do some stupid gimmick, just so people talk about it. You have a goal, and based on what you want, you need to use a technique. Mm-hmm. So in my opinion, a good photographer, whether it's wildlife or anything else, needs both. Mm-hmm. An artistic eye and minimum knowledge of the technique behind it, so he knows how to achieve his goal.
You told me also that you need patience for wildlife
this
photography.
This is for photography. For wildlife photography, you definitely need patience.
Yeah.
You need to be willing to invest the time spending. I'm going to give you an example. We went to the Himalayas about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, for snow leopards.
Okay.
I spent about 2.5 weeks to have one photo.
Wow. Before, but a nice one?
I love the photo of it. It's not necessarily nice or not, but it's beautiful. It shows a leopard in the beautiful environment.
It. Yeah.
No, it is always worth it. Even without a photo, it would have been worth it because the environment and just spending time in these beautiful places is worth it.
Yeah.
So you need patience. You need dedication.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I could go spend 2 weeks on the French Riviera enjoying the nice weather. Instead, I was in Finland by minus 20 trying to find wolves.
Yeah,
Which
adventure.
I didn't find, by the way.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You took pictures of everything
bears,
except wolves.
Mostly.
Yeah.
So you need dedication.
Right.
And you need a certain level of, dedication.
Do you need to be fit?
You need to be fit because the equipment is heavy. Because you end up going to places that are very inhospitable. It's either plus 40 or minus 40.
Yeah.
The coldest I've been to was Churchill for polar bears about 2 years ago.
In New Zealand?
No, Churchill in Canada.
Churchill in Canada? Yeah. Where is that
exactly? It's on Hudson Bay.
Oh, okay.
It's about 2 hours north of Winnipeg.
I'm Canadian and I don't even know.
And not many people know where Churchill is.
Okay.
It's about 2 hours north of Winnipeg.
Oh, okay, in Manitoba.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
It's right on Hudson Bay.
Oh.
it was minus 40.
Yeah.
There was one particular photo that I really wanted to take. It turned out to be one of my favorite photos.
Yeah.
But I almost lost a couple of fingers in the process.
Oh,
because
from frostbite?
We were outside of the vehicles.
Yeah.
There was a beautiful cub, sub-adult actually.
What were you trying to take a picture of, by the way?
Polar bears.
Oh, okay.
There was a beautiful polar bear cub playing in the on the little beautiful hill.
Yeah.
And there was beautiful light on the hill. But the bear was not playing in the light. He was playing next to the light.
Oh, in the shadow, right.
It was minus about 35, minus 40.
Yeah.
And, every other photographer took the photo of the bear and left. But I wanted the photo of the bear in the light.
Mm-hmm.
So I waited for about half an hour. After half an hour, my gloves froze. So I could
Your gloves froze.
Yeah. Well, I had double gloves with heating pads and everything.
Yeah.
They froze. So I could no longer use them.
You
I
have
removed
to keep
them.
On moving your fingers.
I removed the gloves.
Yeah.
So for about 5 to 10 minutes, I was by minus 40 without gloves. I finally took the photo that is today one of my favorite photos.
Okay.
But I almost lost. I mean, I didn't lose the fingers.
Yeah.
Let's not be too dramatic. But yeah, so you have dedication and you have to be fit and you have to have a tolerance for pain.
Tolerance to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. Exactly.
Pain.
Exactly.
Okay. Many of the animals you take pictures of, they're fierce, they're dangerous. Have you ever been in the face of danger? Have you ever been scared?
This is interesting because I just came back from India. I was in India for tigers in January. And tigers are probably the most aggressive of the cats.
So they are.
There is more risk on the tiger than there is on the lion. The lion doesn't care about you.
So
the question was, are you afraid? And my answer, yes, of course I was.
You were.
No, but not of the animal. I was afraid of actually having a beautiful sight in front of me and missing the photo.
I was going to ask you about that, actually.
I feel zero when I have a beautiful sight in front of me. I'm not afraid. I'm totally focused on the animal, on the photo.
Yeah.
So the fear is mostly to have, any photographer's nightmare is to have something beautiful in front of you.
Yeah.
Something that could have been an amazing photo.
Yeah.
And miss it.
Mm. I was thinking...
Because
like,
it never
ever,
comes back.
Do you ever like get tired and fall asleep or something?
No, but sometimes you have the wrong setting. Sometimes something happens. Sometimes.
Yeah.
So this is in the wild my biggest worry, actually.
Okay.
Is to have something that could have been an amazing photo that is not because I missed it.
Yeah.
So this is my fear with animals. And no, I never had any... I was never in any type of danger or at least I never felt I was.
Well, animals are very unpredictable, so you never know if they're going to sit, if they're going to get up. I mean, you're saying you're afraid you'll miss the picture.
Actually, they're pretty predictable in terms of not attacking you. They don't really care about you.
Oh, they don't.
Because you're not really part of their normal, you know, menu. They don't...
I see, okay.
They're not used to eating humans. I mean, they're in the wild. I mean, accidents do happen, but usually the accidents are because of something stupid humans do.
Right.
Like get out of the car when you're not supposed to be, walk when you're not supposed to walk. Basically follow whatever the guides tell you, tells you, and you're safe because these people have been living for years with the animals.
Right. So they don't feel danger from you. They don't feel afraid of the humans.
No, I mean, They don't. I mean, a tiger could attack you because it's his ultimate ambush predator. So, you know, if you're walking in the forest, actually, you have issues with villagers because the problem is that so many villagers that have become so close to the jungles where the tigers are that you have interaction. And sometimes you have people who actually walk, I mean, a villager walking back home gets attacked. But it's not very common.
Okay. So these are isolated
incidents.
They're
very isolated incidents, absolutely.
Okay. What picture touched you the most? What was the one that was the most difficult to take?
The most difficult to take was probably the snow leopard.
Oh, the one in the Himalayas.
And the Himalayas.
The one that you stayed 12 days to wait.
More, actually. Oh, yeah, almost 2 weeks. A bit more than 2 weeks, actually. There is no picture that touched me the most.
Mm-hmm.
But to answer a question that was already asked to me, my favorite destination is the one I just came back from.
Mm.
So whatever I come back from a destination, it becomes my destination because it's, you know,
you're
mesmerized by how beautiful it is.
Yeah.
So I don't have a particular photo that I love.
Mm-hmm.
I have a few,
but
they probably change depending on my mood, depending on...
Your feeling for the moment,
I came back from Finland. For me, Finland is the most beautiful place.
Yeah,
I'm going to Brazil on the 20th of June. I'm sure I'm going to come back from Brazil.
For jaguars?
Yeah. I'm sure I'm going to come back from Brazil saying, oh, Brazil is the most beautiful place.
Yeah.
I'm going to Zimbabwe in August. Ah. Probably I will have the same feeling. So
for which animal in Zimbabwe?
Zimbabwe is going to be lions, cheetahs, elephants, and painted wild dogs.
You've never taken a picture of an elephant, have you? I haven't seen it.
But it's not my... I'm mostly focusing on predators. Okay. But Zimbabwe, it's not only the elephant himself, it's the nature. The place we're going to is a lot of forests, a lot of woods, beautiful light in the evening. So this is why it's more going to be an animal in the its landscape type of photography.
They say there's like a kind of le mal d'Afrique when you go there. Kamina, do you feel it? It has nothing to do with wildlife photography.
I mean, it's beautiful. It's le mal de la nature, if anything. So whether it's in Africa or somewhere else, it's just...
Because you always picture that magical sunset in Africa.
It is,
you
have magical sunset in the Pantanal in Africa. In Brazil, and you have magical sunsets in Churchill. I mean, you know, when you have the light, the sun doesn't go very high, and you have beautiful light the whole day.
Yeah.
So it's like it's nature. Nature
we enjoy it here, even actually.
Absolutely,
when there's a nice sunset.
So why go very far?
Do you feel that you're learning the animal instinct?
The animal
instinct.
No, but I'm learning how amazing they are.
Yeah.
Because it's, we need to stop having this ecocentric type of attitude that there are humans and then the rest.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
Yeah.
So what I'm learning more and more is the importance of the animal kingdom. They're all amazing creatures.
The circle of life, their circle of life
kind of thing. And we're no more important than or less important than any other species.
No, we're not.
So this is what I've been learning, you know, when I see animals interact and when I see animals live and when I see animals, you know, whether it's a lion family or whether it's a jaguar hunting or you realize how amazing they are and they have qualities that we don't have.
Right.
Which is instinct, which is... speed, agility, strength, grace, beauty. We don't have all these.
You don't feel that we're graceful or beautiful sometimes?
Compared to a tiger or a lion,
no.
We're not. Compared
no, you're
to
right.
A, compared to a leopard, we're not.
Yeah.
Compared to... No, we're not. I mean, we're it's a matter of being put together. They're beautiful.
They're very harmonious with
look
nature.
Look at the cat, just, you know, a house cat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure they're... you know, imagine this times 200 and you get a tiger.
Yeah, because I look at my cat and you see the same positions, the back, everything.
And their elegance comes from their strength, actually. They're so beautiful and they're so powerful that they move, they flow. I mean, their movements are really very flowing.
Yeah.
They're not.
That's the grace that you mentioned before.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. I actually prepared this question, but maybe you answered it before. Like when the animals look at you, what do you think that they're seeing?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. It's a very powerful moment.
Yeah.
And these are actually my favorite photos is when an animal is looking at me because you really can get more than just the animal. You can get, I don't want to say something that's very corny, but you're taking a photo of their souls almost.
Yeah,
like
I
looking
understand.
At you.
Yeah.
They have piercing eyes. But I don't know what they're thinking.
They're probably analyzing what they're trying to say.
Probably not. Probably they've seen humans before, so they probably look at you as the same way as they look at a tree or a rock.
Okay.
I don't think they have any particular feeling when they look at you.
Okay. All right.
I don't know. I might be wrong.
Yeah, again, we don't know.
But I know what the feeling I have. It's a very powerful feeling when I have a jaguar or a tiger looking at me. It's a very
powerful exactly.
Feeling.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking if they're looking at you, I mean, how do you feel?
How do I feel? I feel mesmerized. Also. I feel I feel lucky.
Yeah, I was going to say you feel like you're existing.
Yeah, but I would love to think that they have the same feeling looking at me, but I don't think they do.
Okay. No, I don't. I don't think they have the same thought process, the same consciousness.
Well, maybe they do, or maybe they don't care about us. But we'll never know.
So, when you see these animals, because it's so mesmerizing, like you said, what goes through your mind about the role of man on Earth, about humanity, about the meaning of life? Because I feel like it becomes a little bit spiritual, a bit like above life kind of thing.
The role of humanity, I mean, you don't need to look at animals to realize how, destructive humanity has become.
Or
actually, let me rephrase this. How destructive humanity has always been, with the difference that now we have the means of bigger destruction than 200 years ago. Listen, I just feel harmony between animals. I mean, they've been around for a long time, and they should be around for a long time unless we destroy it for them. They don't take what they don't need. And they're very harmonious with nature. We're not. We've lost this harmony, or maybe we never had it.
I agree.
So this is, if there's one difference between us and animal kingdom, is they live in harmony, we don't.
Right.
Very simple example.
It's just their needs. They don't go above their needs. They're not greedy.
Absolutely, and they live in harmony. One very simple example. I was in the Maasai Mara, and there was elephants and baboons and butterflies.
And
everything, and ants, and everyone was living in harmony.
Yeah.
We come with our jeep
to
just stop by the river to have breakfast. They all leave.
Ah.
So my guide looks
they
at me and says,
"They start to feel,
It's like, they're all living together. We're the intruder in nature."
Yeah. Did I tell you about the book Mother of God?
You might have.
I think I did.
My
the one by Paul Rosalie.
Yeah, you have. You
the
have,
Amazon
yeah.
Explorer.
You have.
Because you feel how each animal has its role. And how much we don't have a role
actually,
in this.
There was a study, I think, that was published not long ago, a couple of years ago, that basically said that if insects disappear, the whole ecosystem would collapse after a few years.
Right.
So,
I mean, even the insect has a role in nature, but if
and
we disappear...
And I'm pretty sure if we disappear, nothing will happen.
Exactly. No, the Earth will be more harmonious.
Yeah, it's a lack of... we've lost any harmony we had with nature.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you feel... the feeling you get when you actually go and look at these animals.
Does anybody or anything inspire you in particular?
As photographers or as nature?
I don't know, anything.
Well, nature does inspire me as nature.
Yeah.
And I have a few photographers that inspire me. Actually, one of them is a British photographer with his wife. They both live in Kenya. Their name is Jonathan and Angie Scott.
Okay.
They used to have a very big show on the BBC called Big Cat Diaries.
Oh,
Jonathan
right.
is the one who actually mentored me into photography.
You met him before?
Jonathan, we met in India, probably my second year of photography.
Oh, wonderful.
We became great friends and have done probably 20 trips with him.
Right.
Now, no, we're great friends. But initially, he's the one who gave me the main tenets of wildlife photography. So he's a bit of my mentor.
I think you also have the common goal because you want to highlight endangered species, you want to protect them.
Of course.
So you share this common goal, and of course
it's
going to want to help
most
you.
Wildlife photographers have the same goal.
Right.
I mean, you don't make money by being a wildlife photographer. I mean, wildlife photography is a passion, it's not a job. I mean, they do this because they love it.
You can't make money from selling
a
picture?
Well, it's very hard. I mean, there are only a few photographers that make money by selling pictures in big galleries.
Mm.
The majority of wildlife photographers end up having to take tourists on safaris to make money.
Oh, I see.
That's how they make money. I mean, and I got lucky enough because I have my business that allows me to finance it. But otherwise, this is not the career. You don't choose wildlife photography to make millions.
Well, it's important to mention that you're not making money from your pictures.
No.
And whatever money you do raise is to give and help.
The total amount. And whatever I sell, everything 100% goes to various causes.
Yeah, to different NGOs and associations.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's something that I noticed.
Okay.
When I see a lot of line pictures of their heads, a lot of the pictures are in black and white, and you see the scars of the animals. And I also read a quote by Andy Warhol, and he says, "My favorite color is white, my favorite color is black." Is there anything more particular about a black and white picture that speaks more than a color picture?
I don't think that it's either black and white or picture or color. It depends on the message what you want to convey, and it depends on the picture itself. A lion, yes, and you're right, and you're very observant in this.
Yeah, I might make a good wildlife photographer.
Probably would be. I have a series of black and white lion portraits.
Yeah.
Because they're so dramatic. Male lions, not female lions.
Yeah, the male, we didn't mention that.
Their mane makes them, you know, their huge mane makes them so dramatic and so dramatic and so intense and so powerful.
You think it's the mane, it's not the scars.
It's the scars, because they fight. This is why a female lion lives in the wild for about 15 years. A male never goes above 10 to 12, and they always die a violent death.
They do.
Because they're always protecting their territory. They're always trying to take over territory. So they're scarred. They have scars everywhere.
Yeah.
And the mixture of the big mane, the scars, and the black and white is, in my opinion, very powerful and very intense.
So it's the ultimate in wild, I think.
It is. I mean, it's the scars and the black and white convey very emotion, very strong emotions.
Yeah.
So, you're right. It is. And actually, the majority of my photos are color, except the ones of except lines.
Yeah, I noticed that. That's why it was very particular for me.
I might have a couple more in black and white, but no, the majority is in color, except lines.
The gorillas also, you took pictures mostly of their
faces,
of their heads.
Again, because they have a very powerful face.
Yeah. Do you see like a resemblance with man, or not necessarily?
Listen, we share this almost the same DNA. I mean, I think there's only I don't know the numbers, so I don't want to say something stupid. But the chimp is our closest cousin.
Right.
But then right after the gorilla. I think it's only 10 million years of evolution, actually, or something like this. But at over 99% of our DNA is similar to chimp DNA, and I think gorilla is 98.something%.
That's fascinating. I mean,
it's very similar.
Yeah.
And but they have a very powerful face. They're very gentle.
Oh, they're gentle?
Gorillas are amazing.
I thought they were very aggressive.
No. Chimps are much more aggressive. Not aggressive, they're more, much more cunning.
Oh.
They hunt in groups. Gorillas eat vegetables. I mean, they're vegetarian, basically. They don't eat meat.
Oh, I always
understand. Or they rarely do.
Okay.
Chimps are more, chimps hunt in packs. They're more related to humans much more than gorillas are. Gorillas are gentle. I mean, they're big, they're powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, a male gorilla, it was estimated that a male gorilla can, a silverback, which is the adult male, can actually take on in a fight over 20 men.
Wow.
They saw at some point a male gorillas lifting a tree that weighed about 2,000 pounds.
Wow.
2,000 pounds.
Wow.
So it's about twice or three times their weight. They can kill you, but they don't.
Of
course. They're very powerful, but very gentle, very chill.
Oh,
unless they feel that
they're in danger.
Not them.
Oh.
Mostly the kids in the family, the babies in the family.
Oh, so they have like a parental role.
They're very protective.
Yeah.
And they will not be aggressive towards humans, but sometimes they are aggressive with other males. Because there's also a domination thing. I mean, you have...
They protect their pack.
In a gorilla family, you have one or two silverbacks. The silverback is above, I think, when the male gorilla reaches 20 and above or something, and he gets the hair on his back silver. Grayish.
Oh, okay.
So they call him a silverback. So usually in a family, you have either one silverback or two. But one is a dominant, the other one is submissive. So you only have one dominant silverback.
Okay.
And sometimes you have fights between silverbacks or fights with blackbacks. Blackbacks is a younger male who
they
are trying to take over.
The gorillas know between the silver and the black.
Well, it's
they
different
see
in
it?
Age. They feel it, of course.
Oh, okay.
And so you have fights to take over families, and so they can get very, very violent between gorillas.
Mm.
But with humans, they don't. I mean,
they're okay.
I never felt. I was in Uganda in November for about 10 days. We were literally half a meter away from gorillas, and never felt endangered.
Yeah, because your pictures are very close up.
Yeah, so we had to wear masks not to give them any disease.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They're very good. Uganda, Rwanda, and even DRC are very good at protecting their
DRC is also?
Yeah. Well, it's a major source of income.
Yeah, I didn't expect that.
Yeah. The total of 1,200 mountain gorillas, they divided pretty much 400 in Uganda, 400 in Rwanda, 400 in DRC.
Wow, you'd wish that they'd protect their population just as much.
Listen, who am I to judge? Yeah. You know, and nothing is ever black and white.
No, but I mean,
there's always some interference of people that should not be interfering, and things will be.
We're getting into politics.
No,
now.
Things would be amazing unless, you know, without the interference.
Yeah.
I had these discussions a lot with people on the Ugandan side of the border. Mm. But yeah, I mean, yeah, they do protect their gorillas. And as far as I'm concerned, it's all I care about.
Yeah, because that's what you're there for, anyways. So, did you see the Netflix documentary about the chimps?
No, but I will.
It's really interesting.
I will.
You really feel the community, the societies, the aggressiveness, like you were talking about before.
They're not aggressive, they're conniving.
They but between each other, you see it, like, you know.
They strategize. They're amazing animals.
It's really fascinating how much.
I need to do two trips, one for chimps and one for actually another gorilla trips in Rwanda.
Where would you go for the chimps?
I don't know. I haven't.
Okay.
The Rwanda gorilla is a bit different than the Uganda gorilla. They live 1,000 meters higher, so they're actually bigger.
Oh.
They're stronger.
1,000 meters higher. That's quite a.
Uganda altitude. The gorillas are about 1,500 meters. In in Rwanda, it's about 2,005. They live on a volcano.
Oh wow.
Next to a volcano.
Okay.
And I want to take photos of orangutans too. So this is another part of my.
They're very fun. You feel
absolutely.
Like the orangutans.
They're very expressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Oh, interesting. You just came back from Finland, and you feel like from your posts and everything that it was a very transformative trip for you, and you took such beautiful pictures of the gray owl and eagles, and is it the first time you took pictures of these animals?
No, but it was never my focus, but it was not transformative. It was very different because we were really, for about 10 days, in a very empty area on the border between Finland and Russia on the Finnish side. So it was very, very empty. Mm-hmm. And we spent hours and hours waiting in hides on the right on a frozen lake. And it was interesting. Every trip is transformative. Every trip is something different. I mean, my trip in India was like in January for tigers was also transformative. And I'm sure Brazil will be as well. So it's really, I mean, spending a week or two or three in nature is very transformative.
Yeah. You become mindful of where you are, I think.
You forget everything else.
Yeah.
You start focusing on the light, what the animal is doing, the time of the day, how low is your angle compared to the animal, and you forget everything else.
That's so beautiful.
You stop thinking about business, politics, all these things.
That's a blessing.
It only lasts for, you know, as long as I'm there.
Yeah, obviously. So, but it's still nice to be able to disconnect.
No, it makes you realize that there are things in life that are important besides our daily life.
Yeah, that's why I asked you before. I mean, when you're in the area, you start to think about life that's a little bit different. So you start to know what's more valuable for you. What's really valuable.
Just different.
Okay.
I mean, I enjoy my life here as a business person. I enjoy living in Lebanon. I will never move. I will never go anywhere else. I'm happy here. It's it's my country.
Yeah.
But this gives you another dimension, and you realize also that there are things beyond and besides this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not this or that. It's this and that.
So what about wildlife in Lebanon? Have you ever taken pictures?
The problem of wildlife in Lebanon is because it has been so persecuted and hunted, they're afraid.
Oh.
So it's extremely hard actually to take photos of hyenas or foxes or because
they
would. I mean, if you go to these places like Brazil or Finland or places where hunting has been banned for many, many years and the animal is protected, they're not afraid of you. They're not aggressive. In Alaska, I was literally a meter away from a grizzly bear, and he did nothing.
Oh, he did nothing?
Because
they're very aggressive.
No, he kept on walking. They're aggressive in places where they're hunted. When they're not hunted, they're not aggressive.
I see. Okay.
So Lebanon, because of our long history of hunting and killing animals, from hyenas to foxes to anything else, it's very hard to actually see wildlife in Lebanon.
That's too bad.
Yeah, I know. I mean, they learn, they know. I mean, a hyena in Lebanon sees you, he or she will disappear.
They run right away.
Absolutely.
I see my house.
They don't want to deal with us.
No, of course, if we're going to hurt them, why would they want to deal with us?
So it becomes very difficult for a photographer and very frustrating when you can't see your subject.
Yeah, of course. Is there any message that you'd like to give to the Lebanese?
Stop killing wildlife.
That's direct.
There's no point. I mean, stop killing birds that, you know, fly, migratory birds that fly over Lebanon.
Oh, that's horrible.
And stop throwing garbage everywhere. But, you know, it's not only
Just
Lebanon.
Just be civil, Liam.
Yeah, but it's not only Lebanon. You have issues with wildlife and nature pretty much everywhere in the world.
There is.
Yeah, so
it's unfortunately.
And some countries have it worse than others, but it's an issue everywhere.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, so we don't realize the importance of wildlife.
Until we lose it.
And people don't care. Yeah. Actually, I used to think this, but the majority of people don't care if we live in a world without lions and tigers. I do. I don't want to be in the world,
no,
I'm sure.
Wow.
I don't want to live in a world without lions and tigers, but I'm sure the majority of people don't care if they do.
I mean, imagine if our kids don't know lions and
then
tigers.
For them, they go to a zoo, see them.
Yeah, even that's sad.
No, not even that. This is very sad.
Yeah.
It's not the same animal.
No.
So I do this because I don't want to be in a world without lions and tigers and cheetahs and leopards and jaguars. But I'm starting to think that the majority of people don't really care.
Really?
Maybe. This is a feeling. I hope I'm wrong.
I hope so, too. Mm. I mean, because you feel like there are some people that are really fighting for this and really working hard for this, but it seems like they're being pushed back all the time.
Yeah,
every time they make a step forward.
Yeah, because people have other priorities. And you have to understand people today.
Yeah,
people
economically, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, so this is why I don't know how useful what we as wildlife photographers do. We try to bring awareness, but it probably makes a small difference. It doesn't make a big difference.
Well, at least a difference is good.
Yeah, and I do it for me because I enjoy it.
Yeah.
So,
for last question, which I ask every guest, what makes the ordinary extraordinary? It could be anything. They always ask me what you mean, but whatever's off the top of your head.
What makes the ordinary extraordinary?
Yeah.
How do you define ordinary? I'm asking you a question.
How do you define ordinary?
So I can answer.
Well, if you want something that's like basic, how does it become not basic?
Give me an example.
Okay, I'll give you my example.
Okay.
So, like, the first time I did this podcast and I made a small reel and everything, and when I look out into the sunrise and I appreciate and I hear the birds and everything, just the feeling for me, I made it extraordinary for myself. That feeling, you know, a sunrise is a sunrise, birds singing. But I made it extraordinary because the feeling for me, I appreciated the feeling. The rays on my face, the birds chirping in my ear, you know, the wind caressing my cheek.
I think there are two ways to answer this question.
Okay.
The first way is, as you just said, it's the way you perceive something.
Okay.
Like a sunset.
Yeah,
you know,
that's exactly.
That's one every day.
Yeah.
So it's extraordinary because you make it so, because you think it is.
Yeah.
And the way you look at it, you know, you feel it's special.
Yeah.
This is as a spectator, but as a doer, the way you make something ordinary, extraordinary, is by doing it well.
Yeah, okay.
Like, you know, you want to be a photographer, be a good photographer. You want to be a carpenter, be a good carpenter. I don't care what you do, but you make something extraordinary, you have to do it well.
Yeah, make the effort.
Exactly.
Put in the effort.
So put in the effort.
Well, thank you so much for this. Is so enriching.
Thank
you. I know I could sit
and
talk.
We're done already?
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking the same thing because I know I can sit and talk and ask like 20 more questions, and I already cheated and I asked more than 10 questions. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been more than 10 questions, but maybe one day we'll have another talk.
Absolutely.
When you after another trip.
Thank you very much. It was very interesting.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks.
We'll see you soon.
Great, it was a pleasure.
Thank you, Michel.
Thanks.
Thank
Bye.
You.